If you were down at Hobart's Dark Mofo Festival last weekend, you may have had a chance to see and hear this person, the Inuk throat singer Tanya Targuk. A little bit of Tanya Targuk. By the way, Inuk is singular for the plural Inuit. And the hub producer and general producer at large, Hannah Rarish, wonderful Hannah, was lucky enough to be there. Hannah, hello, how are you?
Hi, Eddie. I'm great. How are you? Thank you for letting me onto your show.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, you've gone to Mofo. How could I not have you on
yes,
the
I
show?
Guess, yes, yes.
Now, I have to ask, did you see Mike Parr being buried below the street?
Sadly, I just missed seeing him being buried, but I showed up right after. And can I just say, the steam just rising off the newly laid road, it was quite dramatic.
I have to say, this whole artwork just makes me feel deeply uncomfortable.
Fair enough, how
did he get air down there?
Well, I was told that they piped it down to him. And before you ask, he actually starved himself for a few days before it, so they wouldn't have to do a number two down there. I knew that you wanted to know about that. You're very curious about this stuff.
I'm always curious about bowel movements on national radio, Hannah, absolutely.
<Yes. laughs>
So did he actually have anything to eat?
Yeah, well, he had a lot of bone broth soup, and that's about it.
Okay, right. So performance art, conceptual art, it's all fascinating and often very bizarre. Now, Mike Parr, I understand, spoke recently at a public forum actually about being buried under the ground. Here he is.
The road was subsiding and I could see the lighter vehicles. I could see their front end bobbing up and down. I thought, this is not looking too good. So... by about 10 o'clock on Saturday night, it was deafening in the box. And when the semis went over the top, everything was rattling. It's going to be a fantastic soundtrack, incidentally, because we were videoing inside the box. So that was great. Then, of course, there were all the ferals in the early hours of the morning that would... It was like sort of playing chicken on the railway bridge. They would run out between the lights and jump up and down as hard as they could on the top of the box.
Mike Parr speaking at a public forum about being buried underneath a road. Part of Dark Mofo, the Museum of Old and New Art, or MONA's Winter Solstice Festival, and it often turns to the dark and deadly. So this Mike Parr peril is, pardon the pun, par for the course for this festival. And apparently, Hannah, so is the work that you're going to be sharing with us today, Waterborne.
Yes, yes. I took a boat ride and I came face to face with death. But I wanted to know, Eddie, can you tell me about the moment when you realised death was like a real thing that was going to happen one day?
Yeah,
to
look,
you?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. Look, I'm not sure I've still realised it, to be honest. I think generally it's a sort of ongoing thing of when I generally play Shostakovich. That's when it really sort of brings death to life for me, as it were. What about you?
Well, I was actually 8 years old when I can like remember it vividly. I was in a hotel room in Hong Kong and we had just gotten my, you know, first flight. So I guess that I was thinking about death in terms of the risk of air travel or something. And I was in this hotel room and I was clutching at my teddy bear and I realized, oh no, one day Teddy would be gone. And then I was like, wait, hold up. My parents one day won't be here.
Oh.
And then I was like, hold the phone. One day I'll be gone. And then I was like, whoa, existential despair and dread. We're all going to die. Oh, I'm freaking out. I'm 8 years old. It was grim. It was dark. But since then, Eddie, I've actually managed to successfully stuff down any thoughts about my own mortality. And that was until I found myself on a wharf down in Hobart about to experience this thing, Waterborne. And just a warning, this contains content that may be confronting for some people.
Welcome to Waterborne. If you'd like to follow me, I'll be the Pied Piper.
Oh, thank you.
See you soon, I'm sure. See you around.
See you.
This is Andrew, the artist, creator of Waterborne. This is Hugh, he'll be helping you on. Okay, so if you just want to take your time, there'll be past one of these to pop on your heads and then come on aboard.
This is your device.
Keep a hold of that. Don't press play just yet.
Okay. Okay.
Andrew passes headphones and listening devices to everyone about to get on the boat.
There you go. Just watch your head there.
Watch your head.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Great.
So guys, we're going to just move away from the jetty and then we'll just take you out a little bit, then we'll tell you the real weather forecast, okay?
The boat comes to a stop in the middle of the River Derwent. I stare into the water and put on those headphones and begin to listen to this story.
The shafts of early evening summer sun glint off particles that hang in the cool water enclosing your body. You are fully submerged, face down, drifting slowly along. Your muscles relax. Your lower back and buttocks float just below the surface. Your head, arms and legs hang limply down towards the riverbed.
My name's Andrew Mottershead. I'm one half of the artist duo French and Mottershead.
So what exactly does the listener experience while listening to Waterborne?
Waterborne asks you to relocate yourself underwater and imagine this journey from a small river upstream, perhaps a tributary, down through the estuary and into those tidal waters and then out into the ocean. And throughout that journey, the body begins to dissolve and dislocate as it becomes increasingly at one with the environment and distributed.
So Waterborne is one part of your afterlife series. Where does this series come from?
Well, the series stems from a combination of personal fear connected to dying alone and not being found, and also a curiosity, and being able to follow that curiosity in the science of decomposition and decay. We started working with a forensic anthropologist who was able to give us a crash course in the process of death and decomposition in different environments.
So this is one of the environments. Why did you choose water? I know that you've got one in sort of forest lands, in a museum, in a home.
It's a landscape piece. As water as a landscape, it implies much more of a journey, whereas the other pieces, if you're lying in your own bed or in the woodland, or these are very static pieces. So we liked that aspect of taking people on an imagined physical journey through different bodies of water. But it's also some of the phenomena that happen within decomposition in water are incredibly different from a terrestrial or, well, let's say, land-based decomposition.
Back on the boat, I am learning quite a lot about my body.
The first of your outer layer of skin slips from your cheeks and forehead. Whitened, loose layers of skin on your hands detach. Your hands deglove, and the skin is taken away on the tide to dissolve in the water. Increasing salinity poisons the midge larvae.
It's pretty gross stuff, but rest assured, it's all been thoroughly researched. What was the most surprising thing that you encountered in your research?
There is, in the Anatomy Museum, London Anatomy Museum in London, there's this specimen of a male penis which has been degloved.
Right.
Degloving is a process of the skin becoming so waterlogged that it basically slips off. It expands and slips off the form. Begins on your hands, begins on your feet, but eventually, and other sort of, that was pretty gruesome. Maybe you don't want to include that.
No, that was exactly what I was after. I mean, it's a gruesome, visceral experience, the hand degloving.
Yeah.
What was your favourite language that emerged out of this?
It is the phrases like degloving. I mean, through the process of all of these afterlife narratives, the research language is incredibly dry. So it's actually been a process of us translating those scientific observations into phrases that people can feel.
The story goes for 26 minutes, which is quite a long time to listen to something in such gruesome detail. But French and Modishead's careful and poetic phrasing makes me stick with it.
Down here, winter sunlight flickers through the blue. The salt water is cold, clear, and cleanses what remains of your body. You still have some fat and skin, and some buoyancy. You are carried by the coastal currents, a few meters from the ocean floor. Storm tides.
You've done this twice before, once in Finland and once in the UK.
Yeah.
How does this iteration differ?
We had to rewrite it so it would tap into the listener's own archive of familiar bodily sensations and references. So things like the canal we had to cut out. We had to completely recast it for this, what we would imagine as being this water course of the Derwent. And then, of course, the biosphere is different, so there's different flora and fauna. There's also a sense that this is a different kind of body of water, those different qualities of water than we had in the turgid, muddy estuary rivers of the UK and in Europe. So, yeah.
I guess you had very different sea life nibbling on the bodies.
Yes, different sea life. No sharks. No sharks. Although they don't play a massive part of this.
No, they don't.
Elvers play more of a part, I think. Mm. Yeah.
I don't even know what an elver is.
An elver is a baby eel.
I've learnt so much. I mean, people do die in water. Death and bodies left. It's a very emotional thing. Mm. What's your responsibility towards the people that that you put into this experience?
As a piece of work, okay, yeah, it may well be quite gruesome at times to experience, but there is a reason for that, and that is to an attempt to kind of puncture the fear that we have of our body and our demise. The voice that we choose to use is a soft, measured tone to deliver the narrative. It's sort of a friendly voice as well.
It's disarmingly friendly, yeah.
But it is there to guide you through this journey, and of course, you're alive as well, so you're not actually dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's about death, but it's also very much about life, right?
Absolutely. We rarely mention death. It's all about the life that occurs after that last breath, about the processes of transformation and renewal on a biological or chemical basis, and what happens to your bits of your body parts.
Yeah, because ultimately you end up feeling quite connected to the natural world through this process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We are watery bodies. Well, that's what we're told when we're being educated as children. And if you couple that with the process of going through the water cycle or the rain cycle, it's a really evocative image of being a part of the, something bigger than ourselves.
The boat ride is over, and I'm feeling strangely peaceful and oddly connected to the world around me. And I'm not the only one feeling that way.
How are you feeling post-waterborne?
I'm feeling so relaxed. I thought it was so fitting to be out in the middle of the sea. And I loved it. I thought it was fascinating. I'd never known the kind of details of how much our bodies sort of dilapidate and how they decompose in details, that some animals that eat like soft tissue and some, like the bird eating the back of our skull, like just like things that you would never know.
Yeah, it's interesting that you described it as relaxing, because it's like come face to face with your body decaying in water. Does it sound relaxing?
So true. Yeah, but I suppose it's like forced meditation and like learning at the same time, which is really nice.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I found waterborne to be quite a confronting experience. But yeah, there it kind of finds a kind of beauty on the subject of death. And yeah, it's quite poetic, just breaking down the science of decomposition, as dark as it may be. Yeah, it is quite meditative when you're sitting in the boat and just feeling the gentle waves of the ocean. Yeah.
Back on dry land, the sun has almost set and I can feel the electric energy of Dark Mofo Festival all around me. I'd come into Waterborne thinking that this artwork was really dark and all about death. But I'd learnt how much it was about life. It was somehow both life and death affirming.
I think it's about feeling that dying is a living process. And that acceptance on understanding that dying is a living process is a really interesting aspect of this piece. And as an attitude, maybe that is a useful thing to carry with us.
Has making this work changed your attitude towards dying and mortality?
I would say yes. It's definitely put a more positive perspective on it for me. But of course, it doesn't deal with aspects such as grief and those real emotional aspects of dealing with death and mortality in your own everyday life. But it certainly does give you a good, healthy perspective on the physical and maybe perhaps some emotional aspects of it.
Death-defying producer Hannah Reach there, bringing us that story from Dark Mofo and Hobart. And if you want some death-defying music, do check out Shostakovich, especially his 13th string quartet. And if you want to experience decay firsthand, Waterborne is running this weekend at the festival. Check out our website for all the details.